All right, here we go on a Thursday. Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp with you. Drew producing the show. Coming up in 45 minutes, Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, going to join us. Get his thoughts, of course, on Chiefs, Bengals heading into week 2 of the season. Plus a little bit on Thursday Night Football tonight. It's actually a big one in the AFC. It's Buffalo and it is Miami down in very hot and humid. I think it's like 100. It's supposed to be because they're going to have rain earlier in the day and everything going on down there. They're going to have like 103, 104 humidity earlier today, right before kickoff.
Gross.
Which sounds miserable for an NFL game.
And remember, Miami designed their stadium so that you were in the sunlight if you were on the opposing bench, and you are not in the sunlight if you
aren't. The game's
going to
start.
Now it's at night, so it won't matter.
But during warm-ups and everything, I hear you. It's definitely going to be a humid one. So we'll get to that with Ross Tucker.
Genius, by the way. I actually respect it.
Yeah, well, why not? And then Danan Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver, of course, color analyst for the Chiefs Radio Network. The game's right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. Danan's going to join us right around 12:10 today, plus Paul Charchian in the 1 o'clock hour.
Ooh, busy
fantasy
show.
Football. It is week 2. Yeah, man.
It's My been, teams are all screwed.
Well,
I'm terrible at fantasy football. I used to be good because I like paid more attention and did more research. I'm not as good. I'm just straight up not as good at fantasy football as I used to be.
There's a lot. There's some big injuries in week 1, man. Screwing up a lot of teams. I can definitely.
McCaffrey, Puka.
It would be terrible to have McCaffrey and A-chan. Puka on your same team.
Do you also have A-chan on that
I
team?
Don't.
And
I don't. Okay. But Puka and McCaffrey on one
and
team.
And Jordan Love somehow?
I don't have him.
Okay.
But Puka and McCaffrey on one team is kind of bad right now, to say the least.
It's not good.
You guys can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. You can also watch the show on Twitch, Twitter, X, Facebook, YouTube, all the platforms that you need to check out the show. We know we got a lot on the line with Drew for Sunday's game, and we were just waiting to see if there would be some trash talk.
Been kind of quiet
in
on
Cincinnati,
that
and yesterday it started. Thank you very much, Cam Britt. Thank you very much. It had been a little quiet. They had their own problems to worry about in Cincy, with Ja'Marr Chase and his contract and Joe Burrow doing weird wrist exercises constantly because he's not 100% clearly at this point. All of that was going on, and then Cam Britt opened his mouth yesterday and provided us with a gem and even more motivation when you call out Xavier Worthy a little bit.
What does Xavier Worthy bring to this KC offense that you guys need to be prepared for?
That's about it. He can run straight. Run jet sweeps and just run straight. He can't do too much else, so that's about it. Feel like you put your hands on him. He's only 100-some pounds. So you put hands on him, you'll stop the speed. So basically get hands on him.
He can only run straight. That's it. What's beautiful
Dude,
out there
that feels like the Jalen Ramsey comment from Tyreek Hill's second year.
What's great about this is I know Worthy was already motivated his second NFL game. He's coming off a great week 1 performance, 3 touches, 2 touchdowns. And then you know that, as we've seen throughout time, and certainly during this rivalry, comments like that get right back to the Chiefs. Now, they'll be asked about it today. They won't comment about it. Usually, there's only one time where I can remember Justin Reed, he kind of fired a shot. Every other time the shots have been fired this direction.
Before the game, yes.
After the game, mm-hmm. When the business is handled, the Chiefs maybe make a little sly comment. That's the way you do it. After the wins, Cincinnati's doing a lot of yapping for a team that just got embarrassed by New England.
Starts to feel like I'm supposed to bet a Xavier Worthy anytime touchdown now all of a sudden in the game. Or do what I did last week and bet him as a first touchdown scorer. That sucks, because I did bet him as the first touchdown scorer.
Almost.
And he had some touchdowns. Unfortunately for me, the other team scored first. But when you look at what this means again, it's the same thing. You have poked the bear. That's a mistake. That has been proven to be a mistake time in and time out against the Kansas City Chiefs. I cannot think of a single time in which talking trash to the Chiefs did not backfire in a horrible way. Part of this is just like, why would you do this again? This is what probably makes this rivalry great.
Of course it is.
The Cincinnati Bengals talk an awful lot of trash for a team that has won exactly nothing. Nada. Zero. They've made one Super Bowl in like 40 years, and they're the mouthiest team in the entire league. They can't help themselves but talk. Like, you guys might want to, like, get something accomplished before you try to rile up the team who's in the middle of a dynasty whose dynasty might continue. Maybe don't try to piss them off for the afternoon.
I mean, I love it. Deep down, I really do love it.
Oh, dude, it makes the game so much more interesting. This game kind of felt like, since he wasn't there, I thought maybe it was going to be more vibing. Now they're talking trash. Okay.
It had been a quiet week. You know, normally these teams play late in the year, and so you really know what's at stake. You're talking about seeding, and you're a week away from actually having in the playoffs, things like that. This is only week two of the season, and it has some seeding implications we talked about. Like Cincinnati, if they were to lose this, it's very unlikely that they have a path to be one of the top seeds anymore if they were to lose this game. I think that's true. But it had been quiet because, again, I don't think the Chiefs are going to fire any shots pre-game. It happened one time, and that was Justin Reed, and we know the reaction to that, and Andy was not happy, to say the least. So I don't expect us to hear anything on the Chiefs end until after the game, assuming they win the game on Sunday. But this is why it's the top rivalry. It absolutely is. You need to have competitive matchups. They've had that with Cincy. And you also need to have a little hate. Not just some disrespect, but you got to have some hate. And it is very clear they don't like each other. Very, very clear. It's one thing like all the years of Buffalo and the Chiefs play the Bills and competitive matchups and things like that in the regular season, at least. And in the postseason, the Chiefs, of course, have dominated the Bills. But there almost is a little too much respect between those two, you know?
Uh-huh. And they like each other too much.
And the fan bases, I think, respect each other. Talking about Buffalo and Kansas City, right? Blue-collar fan bases, up until this run, the Chiefs hadn't had a whole lot of winning in a while. I think there's a little bit more of a respect thing, which is why the Bills rivalry is not on the level of what the Chiefs and Bengals are.
It doesn't feel as visceral and angry. Yeah,
it started with competitive football, and then the next part is you got hate. You got the mayor a couple years ago in Cincinnati making the silly comments, and then Travis with the jabroni stuff. You got Ja'Marr Chase won't even say the quarterback's name in Kansas City. You got Cam Taylor Britt, and I know Nebraska fans are liked him, but I don't care anymore. He's in the NFL. So
he's the enemy now.
He's the enemy. And he was he's a nice player, but who the hell is Cam Taylor Britt? Let's be real. Like, who the hell
is
he?
Made it sound like this is Chris Jones or Travis. Like, those guys are allowed to say the things. Ja'Marr Chase, in a lot of ways, is allowed to say the things he said. He had 266 yards on the Chiefs once. When he called him tuna in a can, it was fair. it was poignant at the time. But again, they haven't won anything except a couple of regular season matchups. Now, where I agree with Cam Taylor Britt is, I also just don't like them. Like, that's what rivalries are about. I just don't like Cincinnati. I don't like their whole vibe. It makes me like Joe Burrow, he's probably a likable guy. I don't like him. I don't like Ja'Marr Chase.
Arrogant,
I don't like Joe Burrow. I think his nicknames are stupid. I think his hair looks dumb. I don't like any of it.
Joe Burrow's the most respectful player on the Bengals, I would say, towards the Chiefs,
probably,
actually, believe it or not.
But it doesn't matter. He's lumped in with his brethren. Well, you know, what's Yoshevich? What's his name?
Yoshivas.
I don't even like him. I don't even know anything about him. I don't like him either. He gets lumped in with the rest because that's what the rivalry has done at this point. And it felt like up to this point in the week, I wasn't feeling that hate because I was like, oh God, Cincy looked terrible. And the juice wasn't flowing.
Oh, it's back now, baby.
Now I'm in.
I think it's
now I'm right back in.
I think maybe they're trying to also fire themselves up because of how much of a dud it was.
They need to.
Last week. I mean, all you got to do, Cody, to your point is, ask Chiefs fans about Josh Allen. Great quarterback. You know, I have nothing bad to say about him. Joe Burrow, I hate him. All you got to do is ask about him. All you have to do is literally ask about the quarterback.
But he's definitely got like a Karate Kid 2 villain vibe about him.
And Macaulay Culkin, nobody likes him. Yeah.
A lot of it has been the close games and everything. But yeah, there's definitely more respect towards Josh Allen and the Bills, which is why it's not the top
it's
rivalry.
Too friendly.
And whereas, Joe Burrow, I mean, a lot of people look at him as just a cocky, arrogant player. Josh Allen, they're like, he's a really nice. Most people don't call him cocky and arrogant. There's just a real level of hate. That's what's fun about sports. And I can't wait for Sunday. You're right, Cody, though. It has added a little more juice than what we had 24 hours ago. So I appreciate Cam Taylor Britt for that. Otherwise, everything about, I have no interest in ever going to the city of Cincinnati. I'm like, no interest.
Never been.
You're not even from there, Drew, so I'm not even insulting you.
Oh, no, I know.
Cincinnati, screw that city, too. Their mayor making the dumb comments a couple years.
You got to do is go back to last year and hear Nate's comments about the city of Cincinnati to know how Nate feels about it. Yeah. He describes how bad he thinks it is, but
never been. Look, probably never will be. I imagine it is a city I will never visit.
No reason to go there.
It is a fine city. Kings Island's there. It's a good attraction. I mean, you got the Ohio River. Do not go for Cincinnati Skyline Chili. I can tell you that much. It's not
Yeah, that's trash. So I've been told.
I think the last time this station went to Cincinnati was when the Royals voted All-Star every single game. Player into the All-Star game.
That's right. Bink was there. I think Bink was there.
Yeah, great.
I think it was the previous midday shows. Yeah, Lake and Bink and Lake Ryan Winkowski all went to Cincinnati.
They drove. That was a long drive.
Jesus.
You want to drive to Cincinnati together?
No.
What's the longest you think you could tolerate me in a road trip?
It depends. Are we going to Cincinnati or are we going Cincinnati, someplace fun?
I think Cincinnati's probably like an eight-ish, like 8.5 hour drive-ish.
Let's say hypothetically,
around there.
Someplace you want to go. Somewhere fun.
You're telling me it's the same distance to drive to Cincy as Chicago? Yeah, I'll pick Chicago. Thank you.
Yeah, it seems like a fairly obvious.
Oh, no, screw the Bengals. It's back on, baby. The hate is back on this week. I cannot wait till Sunday afternoon at Arrowhead.
I hope Andy runs the ball 10 times. I hope Andy runs the ball 10 times.
You're saying that like the Chiefs can't win if they don't run it 30 times. Like you said it a couple times this week. Like they'll win if they run it 40.
I kind of hope they run it 12 and win.
They can win by passing. No, they can win by passing.
Of
like they
He's
have
just
before.
Saying it's a guaranteed
but
win if they run.
If they run the ball 40 times, they will win by 14 points. They will win by at least 14 points. They will win by 2 touchdowns. Everybody says 14 points. Chiefs are going to kill them. If they run the ball 40 times, they will win by 14 points.
No, they probably not running. We looked this up. It's not.
I know it's not going to happen. Which is it's going
to last time Andy ran it over 40 times was the COVID year Tuesday or Wednesday game.
It was 39.
It was 39, and it was foggy, and it was there was no fans in the stand, and it was stands, and it just didn't matter. So yeah, that's not.
I'm going to do my best to not be on Twitter as well on Sunday. I'm going to wait. Till Monday to really give the reaction, win or lose.
That.
I'm not going to say anything.
Mm-hmm. I respect that. I won't say anything to you on Twitter. I will be on Twitter
okay.
on Sunday.
Okay.
I can't guarantee
on
that.
On the other side of the Truman Sports Complex parking lot, we've officially reached the end of the gauntlet. There was a 20-game stretch that we all talked about going into it in which the Royals were going to have to face what was presumed to be, and pretty much was at the time, 85% playoff teams with every single team at least being in the hunt for the postseason. They wrapped it up against the Yankees last night and what I would call a really good fight between two baseball teams in which the Royals did not come out victorious. But a reminder, that was a 9-game stretch with all three teams in the playoffs. Actually, a 12-game stretch because Houston's in the playoffs. Oh no, actually a 16-game stretch because it's every team. Every single team is actively in the playoffs and actually ahead of the Royals in the standings. They went 9-11. I came out of that stretch feeling what I felt after that game last night. The Royals can hang. And I know that that's a tough thing to hear after they lost a close game in which they threw out Urseg, burned Bubic, maybe hurt their chance to win on Friday. Who knows? They have an off day today, so probably not. But they 0-11 with runners in scoring position, and they had to throw out their whole bag of tricks and came up short. But they can hang. They came out of that series far different than when I felt in the middle of the summer. They came out of that gauntlet 9-11. And honestly, I feel pretty good about the Royals as a result of that.
As we said, after a win yesterday or 2 days ago, we mentioned that, hey, that if you were still hanging on and wanted to see him do it against the Yankees, the win helps. I think last night, even in a losing effort, does help to your point a little bit. That was a gut punch still for me, even though this team's going to make the playoffs.
Just an annoying loss.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're living and dying by every pitch. It gets to extra innings, of course. And just the way that ended up playing out, that was just a really tough one. Like, you felt like you had it. You were that close. Things were going really well for you throughout the game. And you did it in a night where Cole Reagans, I think he would admit, wasn't his best. He had 7 strikeouts, but you know it just took one hit to change it. Juan Soto's an incredible baseball player. We know this. He's going to get like $300 million in the offseason or whatever, probably from the Yankees. So that is going to happen, and it could happen in the postseason as well. But Tommy Pham, we mentioned him yesterday. Once again, the guy got on base 4 times yesterday. They have a real leadoff hitter right now, mm-hmm. and you got to hope this momentum of him continues for the next month. That's got to be your month plus, I guess, if you're really getting optimistic about what this playoff run
can
be.
And look, the issues with the Royals still exist. Like, I think that what we found out is Freddie Fermin or DeYoung were playing a good amount of baseball. Now they're having to play a lot more baseball, and as a result of that, sometimes you can get exposed.
Yeah. Well, MJ was in the fourth spot last night, and that just was not working.
Yeah, and they're trying. They seem to be cycling back and forth between righties and lefties in the cleanup spot that they think if there's a pitching matchup, that's what they're going to have to do. Truth is, that's what they're going to have to do early in the playoffs. J.J. Piccolo had told us the timeline on Vinny's injury. He said 6 weeks. The original deadline was 6 to 8 weeks. In speaking to Vinny, I don't know, like maybe around the surgery time, I think everyone's still just like, please let it be 6 weeks. I don't think we'll know until we get closer.
I think you just have to approach it as if he's not, not going to be part of this thing.
Which, because, like, at best, it would be they'd need to be in the ALCS, and then maybe Vinny would be available to come back to this team. Which means you're going to have to kind of mix and match in there. The way to win last night is the same way they won the game 2 days ago and almost won the game last night. Cole Reagans went six innings, allowed two earned runs, and then they showed their hand, I thought, a little bit. They treated it like a playoff game a little bit. Rather than trust some other guy had it in the bullpen that day, they did two innings of Urseg, followed by, they were trying to pitch, two innings of Chris Bubich. They're telling you they trust exactly two members of the Royals bullpen.
Of course. That's what
and if they're in a desperate way, no. If they're in a desperate way to try to get a win, that is their active plan. The only thing that throws the wrinkle in that, as I told you in the first series, who out of their starting rotation do they trust to just like pump it 95 for an inning or two innings? Like Brady Singer. Do they trust Brady Singer in like the sixth or the seventh?
He might be the name.
To toss two innings to get it to Lucas Urseg? Because in reality, for them to win a lot of playoff games, I don't think there's a... Like, Vern told us yesterday, I think this is what's true. I don't think there's a way in which it's the... They're at 88 pitches, and the harder the order is coming up in the seventh inning, and Cole Reagans is on the mound. I don't... A lot of teams in baseball, I think, go to their three bullpen arms they trust, and they don't let them see the third time through the order. They don't let them see Soto and Judge and all these guys again. That is the opposite of how the Royals will have to treat it. Well, it's just going to have to be their starters.
Some of it, of course, a lot of it is because of the bullpen. A lot of it also, though, is because their starters are clearly their strength of the team, and their starters, yeah, two all-stars, and the other one, Michael Wacha, has been phenomenal. And I'm with you. I think if this ends up being a divisional series and all of a sudden you're talking about a seven-game series, then, of course, Brady Singer's not coming out of the bullpen unless it's game seven and somehow like you're all hands on deck kind of thing. But in a three-game series? Yeah, I think Brady Singer or depending on the health of someone like Michael Lorenzen, maybe that's somebody that comes out of the bullpen and gives you an extra inning or two. But we know who the horses are in the bullpen. We know if they need multiple innings or big timeouts, who that individual is going to be. It's going to be Urseg, it's going to be Bubich, and then it's going to be Sam Long. And Sam Long's still been pretty inconsistent at times, too. I know he's shown plenty of moments, but it's those three, really those two, Bubich and Urseg, that you feel good about. And last night, you know, at some point, like, you don't put that one on Bubich. Ultimately, it's extra innings. It's already a runner on second. He'd already given you an inning, and they were able to get a runner over the third very quickly and put him in a spot where they didn't really need much there in the bottom of the 11th inning.
Yeah, and that's the tough part about it. They had, again, same thing. They were 0-11 with runners in scoring position. Had that gone differently, they might have lost the thing in 10 if Dairon Blanco didn't just personally create a run by stealing third, and then a pass ball meant an immediate run for him. And look, if MJ had just made a better throw in the bottom of the 10th on the tag-up play, maybe they win that game too. That's the way this goes a lot of times, but like I still come out of that. Again, look, it's not being hyperbolic. It's not being, oh, what was that stretch? We're not overplaying what that stretch was. There is, and I promise you, I could look through every single schedule in Major League Baseball. Let's not waste our time. There has not been a more difficult 20-game stretch in anyone's schedule in all of Major League Baseball than the one that the Royals just faced. Every single one is a playoff team. You have the Astros and the Yankees and the Guardians twice and the Phillies as all division leaders. Some of them would currently have a bye. The only non-bye team is the Twins, and the only reason you're ahead of them is because you beat them. So, like, I mean, every single team they faced was a murderer's row of teams. And they came out of it 9-11, which means, can they hang with the best teams in baseball? Yeah, they're 500 against them, like most people.
That, and if we just change the timing of everything around, it's amazing how that, you know, timing is everything and how people feel about a certain team. We know they had the long losing streak during this.
And lost best player, fourth best player,
yeah, they lost Vinny, obviously. And you think about that was at the beginning of the stretch. They finished it much stronger. They got back on track, but you reverse it. Like if we would have been talking about them ending this gauntlet on a 7-game losing streak right now, we'd have a completely different feel. Even if I told you the standings were the exact same, it'd be
because if they were 11 and two, or no, they were, let's say they get zero wins. So they were 9-4 or whatever, and then lost 7 in a row. Yeah, I'd feel pretty terrible.
You know, so
I'd feel pretty bad.
But it's timing's everything for just how we view this team and where they're at. And in, someone texted in earlier about Bobby Wood Jr. as well. I don't think anybody's, he had a rough night. I think everybody's, we've seen enough of Bobby Wood Jr. Throughout the season that I don't think anybody's worried that he won't get rolling again. I think he's going to be just fine.
If there's
that pitcher, what's his name? He had his number last night. The reliever that came in, that was really impressive.
Easiest time of all time to wash away.
Oh, of course.
Bobby Witt Jr. Yeah.
And they have an off day today. They're not worried about that. They get the Pirates this weekend on the road. Of course, the game's right here on 96.5, the Fan, your home for the Royals. Latest playoff standings. Look, the math is just starting to get really tricky to where, like, the divisional thing,
four and a half with 15 to play is really tough.
We were looking at, they might have to, we're going to talk about it more with the win total. Like, how many wins is it going to take to win the division? That's the question I'll throw out there right now, and we'll get to it a little bit later on the show. But right now, you're at 80. The Guardians have 84. You're 4.5 back. You're 5-5 in your last 10. What's the actual number going to be for the division winner? And if you think, think about the number in your head right now, and you can text it in as well, 913-586-7965. So whatever that number is, do you think the Royals with 15 to go can get there? I mean, we're talking about a crazy rate that they would have to get to. We're going to get into this coming up in about 20 minutes.
Yeah, when you look back through, and again, I told you already, they're actually going to get lucky. They're going to dodge Skeens this weekend. But unless they start winning games, unless the Royals go on a 4-game winning streak starting tomorrow, and the Guardians go on a 4-game losing streak starting tomorrow, yeah, the number of games remaining is going to make that thing a real challenge.
So yesterday when we got off the air, we're kind of sitting in our little bullpen area.
Man, why couldn't this happen during this show?
We were sitting in our bullpen area, and like, what is everybody tweeting about Shannon Sharpe for? Like, it just happened.
And usually when it's Shannon Sharpe, when it's anyone is trending and you don't know why,
it's not a good thing.
Mm-mm.
So
normally
I quickly search, and there's a video someone already posted from Shannon Sharpe's Instagram account where he went live. And I played you the audio. Again, it's audio. I mean, there's video, but the phone is like on a nightstand or something, uh-huh, or bed or
yeah,
whatever.
It's on a table,
you can't
yeah
see anything, thank goodness. And
that would have been worse for
clearly
it.
Hear what sounds like someone having sex in the background. Shannon Sharpe, presumably.
We're not allowed to play that audio to confirm that, are we?
I don't think we can play that.
No, I don't know what the rules are on that, but I'm going to say we can't play that
audio.
No,
I would probably mute your computer.
I'm going to go ahead and say we cannot play. We all know what that would sound like, I would hope. So
sounds different for different people, I would say.
Fair enough.
That's a fair point.
Generally speaking.
You know it when you hear it.
I would hope. So then he goes on Twitter and claims he was hacked. I'm hacked.
Classic move.
No chance you're hacked. I've told you with these leaks, I a lot of times think they happen on purpose because they get attention. And last night, Shannon Sharpe and Chad Johnson did their nightcap show, their popular show. They did a special emergency edition. And there were how many? 300,000 people?
There were at the very beginning.
This is why I always don't buy that stuff isn't set up on purpose. But listen to Shannon Sharpe. This is the apology.
Someone that is extremely, extremely private, and to have one of your most intimate details, the audio heard for the entire world to hear. I'm embarrassed for a number of reasons. People count on Shannon, Shay Shay Media Club, Shay Shay Nightcap, ESPN. There are a lot of people that count on him at all times. Even when I'm behind closed doors, I still try to remain a level of, professional, although I'm in the privacy of my own home. and I'm very disappointed in myself, not for the act. I think there are millions and billions of people of consenting age that engage in activity.
So that's his apology.
Not for the act.
Well, of course not. Of course. Why should he apologize? He did mention his agent or his guy that does his social media is the one that put out that it was hacked because he was trying to cover for him.
And his guy's just like, I was hacked.
Yeah, and Shannon was like, I don't think had any idea.
I don't think he actually did it. He would have been on Instagram Live for
100%.
Another minute. I don't know. Yeah. Couple minutes.
Who knows?
Hard to say.
But that
also depends on the person.
That also depends on the person. I think we have the cut where Chad Johnson was just obviously giving him a lot of crap.
It was me being a healthy, active male. I mean, y'all thought I was bull jiving. Hey, I'm gonna get it in. Real talk. Hey, yo.
Okay, so this is obviously.
I'm gonna get it in, man.
In.
Put some respect on my name.
Ridiculous moment for him that people will remember forever. ever. But I can't. What are you doing? Just ignore. What would you do if that happened to you? How do you want to handle it on this show? We might as well get it out now.
We'd have to address it on the show.
Oh my God. I just want to ignore it.
We would
and
have
hope
to
that
address
nobody
it.
Ever mentioned it I also, ever again.
I also don't have, I don't know, what does he have? 500,000 followers or a million followers?
No, but every single Cody and Gold listener would find it.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of people that would notice it far less, but it would have to get brought up on the show. Of course.
That was hilarious yesterday.
How do you accidentally go on Instagram Live? And that's why I'm still very skeptical that it was just completely accidental. How does that happen?
I think he might have
ordered the woman involved here. Did she purposely do it herself?
I'll be honest. I think that logically explains it in terms of Shannon didn't know, because Shannon said he doesn't know how to use Instagram. He's never gone Instagram Live before. I don't know if he has gone on Instagram Live, but there's no way he doesn't know how to do it. I don't know if we can play any of the other stuff that came from it with Ocho Cinco, but there was some promotion.
The very first thing they read was an ED.
Of ED stuff.
They came back from there and they read an ED ad.
It very well fit the second they came back onto the air. Yeah.
So you think it was on purpose? I think it was an accident.
I think it was an accident,
God.
Too.
I don't know whether it was Sharp or the lady involved. I find it hard to believe that it just happened accidentally, that the Instagram Live just pops on. Because they took advantage of it, at least in terms of what
I'm
getting at. Like, if the whole show last night, I watched a couple clips that were out from the podcast, and at one point he acknowledges, because Chad Johnson's like, hey, like, how did this happen? He's like, and Sharp was Joe. He's like, oh, we already been going for 25 minutes before. Okay, so he was talking about that, which then means if that's the case, you're telling me, so you're engaging in the activity for 25 minutes and
pause,
and then. The final 90 seconds, you decide to throw your phone down and it happens to actually go on Instagram Live. I'm just calling BS on that. Why were you? You're holding your phone the whole time?
I got to think.
How does that happen?
Look, maybe it was near in the bed, like a remote, like you're just getting it out of the way. But still, I think that the duration of the video was the duration of the act.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He claims he was going for 25 minutes.
Shannon said it was definitely longer than what the video anyway.
Maybe he's including foreplay.
There you go. Coming up next, we're going to get to what Ja'Marr Chase has done against the Chiefs, and we're expected to be joined by Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. Coming up in 10 minutes, Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, going to join us, former NFL offensive lineman. Definitely want to ask him what he made of Kingsley Suamataia's performance last Thursday in the opener, plus this offensive line for Cincinnati and what the Chiefs, in particular George Karlaftis and Chris Jones, might be able to take advantage of. That's coming up in 10 minutes or so. And thinking of Cincinnati, we know Ja'Marr Chase, right? One of the best receivers in the NFL. He was, I won't say ineffective, but he was limited last week because he didn't practice. And so he played in the game against New England. There was no
And they just didn't have much passing attack anyway.
They didn't have much going on. I fully expect him to be closer to himself on Sunday. We know the track record for Ja'Marr Chase. Now, if you want to have fun with stats, you would say he's only gone over 100 yards one time when he's played the Chiefs or whatever in recent history. Well, he had 266 yards one time, had 97 another. And then last year in December, I think it was only 60 yards when Jake Browning was throwing the football. But of course, he is priority number one. It goes without saying. I don't think they could have won by 40 last week against the Patriots. T. Higgins could be fully healthy. He's not. And Ja'Marr Chase is always going to be the number one priority if you're the Chiefs. Trent McDuffie and Jalen Watson, however they're going to play that and however they're going to match up with Ja'Marr Chase.
I think there's only two answers to this, absent the quarterback, which is typically an answer, but I need to see more from Joe Burrow this year. He had a bad start to the season. He was not having a good season last year, and then he got hurt, and it got even worse. So obviously, then he wasn't available. I think there's only two answers to this, Ja'Marr Chase or Trey Hendrickson. You choose what is the prime. Now, look, here's the good news. It's not two guys on the same side of the ball. You get to focus on both of them separately as being the key guy you're trying to take out of the game moving forward. But I think it's fair. Like, we talked all the trash on Cincinnati in the first segment, and we will get back to the comments, trash talking, Xavier Worthy for no reason. Attacking a rookie with a single game under his belt is pretty weak. But when you look at what Chase has done, he has earned the right to talk some trash to the Chiefs. Not just that 266-yard game. He also has like a 97-yard touchdown game against them. He has consistently been a bit of a Chiefs killer. And I would say when they had a better secondary, So I would hope their plan is a lot of Trent McDuffie on Ja'Marr Chase. More shadowing than they have typically done in the past. And I think that that's going to be common for them against number one wide receivers because of the depth of the secondary and because Trent McDuffie has played inside and outside and can now hypothetically just go where Ja'Marr Chase goes.
He has, but I will say in prior matchups, they've had Tyler Boyd, who's no longer there. They've had a healthy T. Higgins to go with Ja'Marr Chase. And so you're like, wow, you're going up against a wide receiver room that has Chase, Higgins, and Boyd. Now, there's a big difference of what that wide receiver room is now in Cincinnati, in my opinion. And so, and they also, their running back situation, Joe Mixon, more of a problem. Samaje Perine, a running, you know, a running back that has receiving ability. He's now on your team. He can be a problem for them. Like Chase Brown's a rookie who they, a young player they barely used. And then they have Zach Moss, who's a veteran and people were frustrated with. Like, I just don't think their weapons on offense are as threatening. Ja'Marr Chase is the problem for you. And you got to make sure somebody else beats you if you're Kansas City. It cannot be Ja'Marr Chase. He might get his a little bit. But go make the wide receiver that Drew reminds us of 100 times a year from Princeton or whatever school he went to. Make him. He's not capable of going for a buck 70. I can promise you that. So make that guy beat you. Make Chase Brown prove that he's a good young running back.
They didn't even give it to him in the first game.
He was the fastest player last year behind Tyreek Hill in a game. They have to give him the ball.
Well, you would think
he
so.
He was clocked as fast as Tyreek Hill.
But again, let him beat you. If that's the guy who beat you, then fine. It just can't. It can only not be one player on the entire Cincinnati Bengals offense, and it is Ja'Marr Chase. That is the only guy you cannot walk out of that game and be like, you know, like, get his is different, right? If he finishes with 7 for 70, we're all living our lives. What I'm talking about beat you is that he is more than capable of having 140 yards.
Sure.
He's capable of having double that number, or in one game, 266. I don't think he's doing that again. But, you know, don't let him just go out and completely control the game against your secondary, which still has a lot to prove.
What's weird for me, though, is we can acknowledge, let's say Ja'Marr Chase has a great game. He goes for a buck 50 and two touchdowns.
That is a great game.
It would be a great game. In prior seasons, I would have said, uh-oh, they're in big, big trouble. My question
is, we
look at the matchups, and I know we're going to talk more about this here in 25 minutes or so, but like because of their defense and what we look at the Chiefs offensively with Worthy, with Travis Kelce, with Rashee Rice, with Isaiah Pacheco, and obviously Patrick Mahomes doing what he does, like I just think you could go into this game and tell me Ja'Marr Chase has those kind of numbers, and I'm not as concerned going into this year's game as I would have a year or two ago because of where this offense, I think, is back to being.
I think they're more in line to have to win a shootout if it comes to that. But I also just
10 days off, too. We haven't even brought that up.
No,
10
I know.
Days.
I told you that. That's why I felt. That's why I told you I thought they were going to start 2-0. They got the entire offseason to get ready for the Ravens and 10 days, three additional days to get ready for Cincinnati. Both games at home. That reeked of 2-0. That was the best part of their difficult schedule. Gets a little harder after that because then you once again get an extra day rest before you go on Monday Night Football against Atlanta, so more time to get healthy. But they're the healthier team. They're the more talented team. But Ja'Marr Chase is still, at this point, the best wide receiver in the game. Like this game, not the game. The game, Justin Jefferson.
He's top three, yes.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the best.
Like we could choose a number. I wouldn't choose him as the number one wide receiver, but I wouldn't sweat if you said he was top five. But so, yeah, I think he's a dangerous player that you have to be incredibly careful with because Trey Hendrickson is the other one. Trey Hendrickson, I went and watched Robert Mays did a video breakdown review. And guy I really trust. Is he still the Ringer? He changed.
It's all good.
Okay. The Ringer. Robert Mays, who I think is an incredibly good football writer, he was breaking it down. He said the Bengals, while they did finish really well in pass rush this week, and they did, or this previous week against Patriots, it was Trey Hendrickson or nothing. And their secondary stinks. So if you eliminate Trey Hendrickson from the game, well, then I think the Chiefs are scoring 30. If they don't get consistent pressure, I think the Cincinnati Bengals will have to get to 30 points in order to win this football game. And they're better aligned to eliminate a player like Trey than most teams because of their interior offensive line. They can cover it better than most teams. So, yeah, I like the matchup for Kansas City as we go in there, which I know we'll talk more about at 11 o'clock. But, no, Just eliminate that and you're okay.
Ross Tucker's going to join us here in about 5 minutes, our Odyssey NFL insider. I mentioned in the first segment of the show, think of that number for the Royals and for the AL Central, because they're 4.5 back. And I think, you know, just the math is going to be very difficult in terms of the division with where they're at. And FanDuel has the over under for Royals wins right now. Remember preseason what it was? It was, you know, it was 72.5, something like that.
I don't even know. If it was that. Yeah, it was right around there.
So they're way past that. But now it's 88.5. And so, okay, let's say you take the over. You're like 89
Pretty much saying
wins.
They're going to finish one game above 500 the rest of the way.
89. Is that enough to win the Central? I think the answer is no. You guys texted in earlier in the first segment. I said text in and we'll get back to it. I saw a couple people meant 90 to 91 for the division. 91 at least, 92, and they have no shot to go 12-3. I agree. Like that's they would have to have a stretch where not only the Guardians lose some games, but because you don't play them head-to-head anymore, the Royals might have to go 12-3 or something like that down the stretch if for the division. They're going to make the playoffs, but for the division.
They only have 16 games remaining to the Guardians because they play today. So they've got an extra game than the Royals. They've got 16 games remaining. Just to finish at 91, they'd still have to finish 7-9. So if you're asking, let's just say the Guardians, let's just pretend we know the Guardians are finishing 7-9 the rest of the way. Okay, you've done it. Now the only thing left for you to do is to finish 11-4. Like, I hate to call it because it's gotten close again at previous times, but I mean, doesn't that tell us the story the same way that the teams can't catch the Royals in the wild card game? In the wild card standings, you and I have been saying this. I don't think there are enough games left for these teams to catch the Royals. They're 4.5 games back with 15 games to play. It requires too many things to go right. At this point, I'll just say right now, if by the end of this weekend, the Royals aren't within 2 games of the Guardians, well, then it's done. Like, they're going to need a couple of wins when the Guardians lose. Otherwise, there just simply isn't enough time to get it done. For them to go 11-4 and to ask the Guardians to go 7-9 is a massive task. Not like the Royals can't tinker around or mess with it a little bit for a couple more games. But then after that, you got to just start lining up your rotation, which we can talk about later.
I mean, I really think it is like 12-3. And that's just, let's be honest, that's probably not happening. Plus, the last 10 games, if we're just looking at how the last 10 have gone and try to predict a little bit, and I know they just got done with the ridiculously tough stretch.
Yes.
The Royals are 5-5 in their last 10. The Guardians are 7-3. I mean, right there, that's a problem.
One team's already playing. That's why you've lost ground, yeah.
And you don't have the head-to-head matchups. That would, if they were playing 3 more head-to-head, of course, the conversation is way different. But
Guardians got to sweep the White Sox.
The math is just not going to work out for you to win the division the way it looks like. And I would love for a miracle to happen based off of a preseason bet, as we acknowledge. Right? We had them at 30-1 before the season to win the American League Central, but I think they're going to come up about 2 games short, but still getting back to the postseason. We will get back into the Royals in a little while, but let's go out to the hotline and welcome in our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker, where our insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. And it's always good to have Ross on the show. As I said, throughout the season, he's going to join us. I wanted to start, though, with your perspective on the offensive line. Last year, we really used your insight early on in the season when we asked you about Donovan Smith and his performance early, and of course, Juwan Taylor. So now I want to ask you about the rookie left tackle, Kingsley Suamataia, and what you saw in that Thursday night opener and how you thought he played.
Yeah, I thought he did pretty well for his first game. You know, I mean, it's impressive to me for a rookie to be starting, you know, the opener as a second round pick. And it wasn't perfect, but, you know, obviously they won the game. And I think there was a lot there that you could feel like they could grow with and build upon. And so, there's a reason why he's starting, obviously. And there's a reason why they took him where they did. And so if there's going to be growing pains, you would expect them to be early. But, man, if they can get competent left tackle play, and I think they might be able to get, you know, it's not like even in his last year there, I didn't really feel like Orlando Brown necessarily lit the world on fire. And he wasn't great in Cincinnati last year. And I think Donovan Smith was just okay. Rather than doing these one-year rentals and rather than paying them a decent amount of money to be able to have a guy potentially for at least the next 3 years, maybe 4, kind of like what they've had it with Trey Smith at right guard, where you have a really good player, or at least with Kingsley, you know, a solid player at an important position that you're not really paying that much, that would be gigantic. I mean, you know, with all the other guys they have to pay, with all the cap issues that are just as a result of having the talent they have, if they can get him to play pretty well at left tackle, it'd be hard to overstate how important that would be.
If he is just like a pretty good left tackle, right? They get league average play or close to that out of him the rest of the year. Where do you think their offensive line ranks amongst the rest of the league? Because I still think they have the best interior offensive line in football.
Without question, they have the best interior offensive line in football. And so it's funny. There are teams like the Vikings that have two really good tackles, but the interior isn't great. And then there's teams like the Chiefs where the interior is stellar, but then, you know, the tackles, you know, maybe league average or below. I think they'll be league average. And because of that, I think I'd have to pull up my preseason rankings, but I have the Chiefs as a top 10 offensive line. It's so interesting because especially when I played, you know, tackles really got paid a lot. But there was a thought that you could kind of plug anybody in at center in both guard spots and they would be able to, you know, they'd be able to get pretty good production from anyone inside. You could throw a Ross Tucker type. I mean, I started at least five games at center in both guards, which really just means I wasn't good enough to ever just stay at one, you know, that guy. And now those guys get paid. We saw what Creed Humphrey just got paid. We see what some of these other guards are getting paid because what's happening is quarterbacks getting rid of the ball so quickly that if you have a tackle rush, if you have an edge rusher going around the edge, man, quarterbacks are getting pretty good at getting out of their hands quickly and also stepping up in the pocket and just making it a lot more difficult than it used to be for those guys to be able to overcome, you know, some of those issues that they present, right? It used to be edge rushers had time to get around the edge and knock the ball out of the quarterback's hands. Now, I mean, I see sometimes these edge rushers beat a tackle around the edge, but the quarterback either stepped up and threw it or he already threw it. You know, unless you get beat inside, you know, sometimes the quarterback should still have time to unload the ball.
I know you were on the call for the New England, or you weren't on the call for the New England Cincinnati game, but what did you see from Cincy against the Patriots? And was it just one of those bad days at the office, or are there some real concerns there for you?
Well, first of all, let's start with I thought that the Patriots had a great plan, right? Which is what the Patriots' plan is going to be, and quite frankly, has to be all season long, which is they were able to run the ball very effectively against the Bengals, kind of play keep away. The Patriots know they're not as talented. The Patriots know that, you know, they lack weapons on the outside but have a decent defense. So that's what they did. That, you know, they played defense. They ran the ball. They possessed the ball defensively. They didn't allow for any explosive plays. You know, Burrow was just kind of trying to dink and dunk the whole game. They were able to get pressure on Burrow. Keon White had 2.5 sacks. And then you have to be fortunate, right? Gesicki dropped what should have been a touchdown. Then the next play, Tanner Hudson fumbles at the 1-yard line. Otherwise, the Bengals probably win it. This is interesting to me because it feels like if any team kind of has the Chiefs number, or at least, you know, plays their best against the Chiefs. It feels like it's the Bengals, but yet we've also seen in recent history where the Bengals are horrific early in the season. And I think the thought process was that, well, Burrow finally had a full training camp. Burrow finally had, you know, a healthy training camp and off season. He's going to be able to come in and play at a high level. They'll be good. Well, then they just laid an egg. And it doesn't sound like T. Higgins will play again in this one. So that helps things for Steve Spagnuolo. You guys might get a heavy dose of my Princeton guy, Andre Yosivash, who I think ran a route every single snap last week for Burrow. So Don't let the Princeton guy beat you. You guys won't hear the end of it for the rest of the season every time I come on.
Between you and our producer, Drew, who he's a big Cincinnati fan, he's mentioned that wide receiver I can't tell you how many times over the last 4 months. So we are well aware of Yossi Voss.
That's funny. Great kid. Great story. Dude, he could have been like an Olympian in the decathlete. Very, very talented kid. And I think he's kind of the heir apparent for T. Higgins' spot. He's not T. Higgins yet, but I think that's the role he'll play.
Ross, let's talk about the game a little bit tonight. In week one, one thing that stood out to me is that I'm a little worried for the Bills that it might be Josh Allen carry us to the promised land, or we're not going to have enough to win football games. Is that what you saw out of the Bills, or is it just, you know, week one and Josh Allen went superhuman?
Well, a couple things. One is that's the game I did for CBS, and actually I'm talking to you guys right now from Fort Lauderdale because I'm doing the game tonight for Westwood One. So I don't know if you guys carry that or not, but I'll be doing Bills, Dolphins tonight, Westwood One Radio. And you're right about Josh Allen. Now, I think that their receiving core is better than they give it credit for. I'm not sure why they didn't throw the ball to their first-round tight end from a year ago, Dalton Kincaid, more, because I had people in the organization telling me he's really their number one receiver. But Keon Coleman was about as productive as any other rookie receiver out there, and this Khalil Shakir has been really a find the last couple years now for the Bills. Ultimately, though, and they ran it pretty well, but that's just who Josh Allen is. You know, it's funny because they have a stat that says this, and it's true. He's like this era's Brett Favre. You know, I mean, he has the most touchdowns and the most turnovers over the last 4 years. The last guy to do that was Brett Favre in the late 90s. That's kind of the Josh Allen experience. It's probably going to lose a game or two for you every year, but it's also going to win double-digit games, and it is so entertaining. You know, I love watching Mahomes play, but there's kind of an added element with Allen's, I don't know what the right word is, maybe recklessness as a runner. You know, Mahomes gets it done, but Mahomes is pretty darn good about getting out of bounds or sliding. He's always fast enough to not really get, whereas Josh Allen, like, he'll run people over. He'll jump over people. I mean, it's highly entertaining. I'm actually really surprised that he has stayed as healthy as he has throughout his career because he just takes so many shots, but he doesn't really care. And I guess he's just such a big kid that he's able to do it and stay healthy because the way he plays, you would think that he would have missed more games than he has. I'm trying to look it up while I'm talking to you guys, but I mean, he's missed,
very
like, few. In 2022, he missed one game. He's missed one game since his rookie year. That is unbelievable.
I feel like I'm worried, though, that it's going to turn into, because I think that used to be the word on Cam Newton, and in Cam Newton, he wasn't hurt at all until he was, and then he was never healthy again, Ross.
That's a fair point. I don't think they use Josh on that many designed runs. But I would also say to you, you know, it's an interesting question. It's one that I've always thought about with a lot of these guys. Russell Wilson, certainly, would you rather have 10 years of MVP caliber football, or would you rather have 14 years of just a notch below that? Because it's the running and it's everything that makes Josh Allen an MVP candidate. It's why the Bills have won the division 4 years straight. If you try to pull the reins back and try to neuter that a little bit, he's not quite the same guy. He's not a top five guy. And I don't know, I think that's actually a good sports talk radio conversation. It really is, right? Like, would you rather have a guy at his absolute best and MVP and winning divisions and all that stuff for 10 years? Or would you rather have a notch below that for 15? And I don't know, you know.
And if you're asking really me, you essentially asked me, would I rather have Josh Allen or Derek Carr? And the answer is Josh Allen.
For sure. For sure. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that Derek Carr is top 15. I don't know that I'd put him in there, but Yes. The answer is, I think you'd rather have the highest of highs, and when it goes bad, try to get the next one.
Ross Tucker, Odyssey.
Well, I don't think he takes quite as many shots as like Cam does. I think he's a little bit, you know, they're not running him on like quarterback power 10 times a game like Cam was.
Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, going to join us throughout the season. We appreciate it. Nobody's living a better life than you. You were in Hawaii a couple weeks ago. Now you're in Fort Lauderdale. Must be nice.
Yeah, doing this game tonight, and then tomorrow morning flying to Denver. I got Colorado at Colorado State, Saturday night, primetime, CBS. Living the dream, boys.
All right. Next week, we'll talk to you about this realignment stuff that's going on today with the Mountain West and Pac-12. Appreciate it.
Sounds good. See ya.
There you go. That's Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. We'll react a little bit to what he had to say there. Plus, we'll get back into the mismatch that exists with these two teams on Sunday.